I don't know why Campbell's ever changed their slogan, because their like original one was perfect. Soup is good food.
Well, that's the thing.
That was their slogan.
It was good food until they got to it. And it's kind of burying the body, as it were.
I liked their brief slogan during the late 80s of "This is not dysentery."
Dysentery was a thing. Like, yeah. Everything was dysentery themed. Do you remember they had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles brand? They weren't fruit pies, but they had, like, it wasn't dysentery. They had pudding in the middle. They were, like, vanilla pudding and fruit pies, but the pudding was dyed green.
Oh.
So it was, there was an understandable concern. But the commercials were pretty clear. It's not dysentery. It's real food.
So it was more of a dysentery concept than a dysentery flavor. Well, yeah. Were they actually dysentery flavored, though?
No. Okay. No, it was very clear. This is sewer slime.
Okay.
Vanilla flavored. Which makes me wonder what sewers they're playing around in. Actually,
they eat a lot of durians in Southeast Asia.
It's not vanilla, but I gather that the sewers underneath the Vatican are actually almond flavored.
Like almond? Olive?
I know. I do not understand Catholics.
Like, okay? Greg almond flavored?
I'm sorry, you lost me there.
the almond brothers?
Oh, no.
Pardon us, folks. We're going to have Sorth tied to the whipping post.
I deserve this.
Oh, Lord, tied to the whipping post.
Me too.
This is going to be a first. Also, I am not stoned, and I won't even.
Well, you can fix that.
I won't even be getting stoned, unless you really think.
I cover that for you, Sus.
But the source of your powers.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the last episode, I was stoned. This one, you know, I'm still coming off of that sort of cold-ish thing, whatever it was.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, I am meanwhile coming off of a 3-day tolerance break for similar reasons, so I'm kind of a cheap date tonight.
What's that hiding in the alley? Facts, but better. Welcome to Facts, but Better. I am Un, and I will be your moderator. Now, let us introduce our panel tonight. You there. Who are you, and when will you pay me back that money you owe me?
I'm Electric Keat, and you'll never catch me. Alive. Or, yeah. How much do I owe you? Again, I think it's like $3.5? $3,500? I lose track.
$3.5 and an interesting piece of lint will do nicely.
Oh, here. Let me work on that part. Go ahead and harass the others.
Yes, our next glasses have her.
I'm Armando Iannucci, and just come to London, I'll pay it right off.
And our non-glasses have her.
I'm Sorath, and I'd like to point out that I gave you my glasses to pay you back.
Oh, yes.
I don't have any lint, but I have a bendy thing.
Ooh, take that. It's better than lint.
It's fun.
The market's very strong for bendy things right now. All right, then. So that the points matter, we will be competing over one of these bags of M&Ms, but I'm not going to tell you which one.
Ooh, that one has letters on it, too. They're both M.
Contestants, please tell the listeners which bags are available.
This is a bag of peanut M&Ms. It's also a sharing size, which is a lie. A damn lie.
We have two sharing size bags. Isn't that illegal? This one seems to have some form of cryptic diagram on it that says it's strawberry not. Strawberry not.
See, when I first got the script, I could have sworn it actually said just over one of these M&Ms. And there are three entire bags here, one of them in a flavor I've never even seen before. So our budget has clearly increased drastically. I expected there'd be three M&Ms, and I just had no commitment to this. But I'm in it to win it, folks.
Well, what we could do is turn the bags over, and then you won't know which is which, and it'll still be a mystery M&M that I'll feed you.
Ooh, I'm not that colorblind. We can do like a shell game. Oh.
Hmm?
We can do like a shell game with it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Find the lady, and only with packages of obviously colored M&Ms.
And the one in the middle here is a bog standard bag of plain M&Ms. Why does anybody eat plain M&Ms anymore? They really are kind of terrible. At least the others have, like,
a
source of protein or mint flavoring or any number of things. But
this is an ancient bag with 10 M&Ms in it. Folks, this is the gold prize.
A tan M&M bag.
Tan M&M.
Tan M&M.
I was wondering why it would be such an exciting... I thought you were just talking about those little fun-size bags they used to hand out at Halloween that were rubbish. The thing is, it's like how the Three Musketeers used to come in like three different flavors. Thing is, these antique bags of M&Ms, you can hear me rattling, so you can tell it's an antique here at home. They actually... M&M's is actually, of course, the name of the company. It was like Morris and Moskowitz or whatever it was. And the actual candies themselves are printed with threes, W's, M's, and E's.
If you're sharp-sighted, you can tell
exactly.
them apart.
Yeah. So,
as a quick little side note there, Porthos was always the worst flavor of Three Musketeers.
He was a bit... I remember him being the cheesy musketeer.
Yeah, it was kind of not that great.
I was a fan of D'Artagnan or D'Artagnan or however you pronounce that. It didn't matter.
I think you pronounce it Nougat, but I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Wouldn't that have been... Wasn't he the fourth musketeer, though?
Oh, yeah, there was a
Porthos,
promotion.
Athos, Aramis, and so...
Are you saying there, I'm so there's a fourth, fun
it. No. There actually was a D'Artagnan... flavor done as a promotion in 1987.
With that, the banana.
Approximately,
banana. Yeah. They had to say that legally, didn't they?
Yeah.
Actually, I think it was technically circus peanut flavored, which is almost banana.
Yes, that
I
works.
I love circus
peanuts.
This
is the first time I've ever wanted one of our pseudo-facts to be true. Facts!
No, they're real
neo-facts.
They're real facts.
Our improved, our fortified facts, our nutritionally fortified
they
facts
can be,
to be,
they can be
truer
exchanged.
Than they already are.
They can be exchanged with any other fact at a one-to-one exchange ratio. They are essentially real facts. Don't let anybody tell you different.
It's kind of like how in that... One sci-fi novel, Vert, like, one person could be changed for one, like, eyeless alien blob and backwards. Never mind. Rick, there's one person in our audience who will get this, and that was for him. Love you, dude.
Don't we have a show to do?
No,
I have bad news for you.
Oh.
That if we have an audience, that's probably them right there. We at this stage in our illustrious careers, I think we can pander to, you know, one half to one third of our audience.
Rick, we love you, but not enough to share our M&Ms.
It's okay. They're not like hexagons, so Rick won't want them anyway.
So in short, there are prizes and they are candy. And keeping score for us today, Ms. Keat, you have data on your shirt. That means you are good at data.
Yeah.
Sounds more procedural than random. I was explicitly assured random.
All I know is that at the end of last episode, I'd given everyone several million points due to inflation, and they told me I couldn't do it again.
Okay, so my score sheet has a point, and we'll see who wins, the score sheet or us.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The score sheet might win all the M&Ms.
This is stiff competition for the tan M&Ms.
Not tan M&Ms. If that had 10 M&Ms, it would be 12 total.
Oh, yeah.
I'm good at this.
New math.
Yeah.
Our main topics for tonight will be companies that thrive on getting children to resell their products. Please remember this main topic. There will be a quiz at the end of the program.
Okay, so it's kind of like Girl Scouts?
I think this is actually referring to... Ferrari, what's the British company makes the airplanes?
Fiat.
Yes. Fiat and Ferrari.
Now then, for our first round, Gritchild, tying into our main topic for once. Please describe how you would sell one of the following products to one of the following individuals. A lifetime subscription to Corporate Drama Quarterly to a panicking person.
To a panicking person?
I'm sorry.
Wait.
I'm only a protozoan. Well, actually, I'm a virus now. It was put to me as a promotion, but it's really more of a lateral move. I am more infectious.
Ooh.
You can't stop anyone with paramecium alone. Now, let me restate that. A lifetime subscription to Corporate Drama Quarterly to a panicking raccoon.
Oh, this is pandering.
I don't want to be racist, but I mean, like, one host is kind of same as any other to, you know, our people of our announcers. Kingdom persuasion there, taxonomic persuasion, I think is the term.
Well, so, Yeah, it's true.
Honestly, I hate to say it. From somebody's jejunum, we all kind of, all mammals kind of look the same. I've been there. I'm not judging. I have, in fact, been there.
So my first thought is if I were faced with trying to sell a lifetime subscription for Corporate Drama Quarterly to a panicking raccoon, I would convince the raccoon that all of its woes, that everything that it was panicking about was a result of the corporate takeover of the world, of mega corporation, you know, messing with the circle of life, and that was the problem. And if the raccoon wanted to get a leg up on things and perhaps, you know, stop panicking and escape from its terrible lifestyle, that maybe it should subscribe to the quarterly publication and thus learn about the enemy. You see, that's how you do research, is you sort of infiltrate like that. You start watching the television and stuff, and you get a sense for the lingo, and then eventually the raccoon could evolve into something that could, you know, do a shadow run style infiltration of that megacorp and take it down from the inside, or get hired on for better pay. But
listen, raccoons are busy people. They don't have a lot of time to waste. They have scrabbling to do. They have floorboards to lift up. They have pet doors to squeeze through. Three main points. PowerPoint presentation here. One, copper wiring. You want it. Here's where to get it. Two, polluted rivers. How to avoid them. Three, humans jumping out of high windows. Free dinner. Here's where to look. End of story.
Hang on. Was that raccoons Scrabble? Playing Scrabble?
Scrabbling. That's not actually the correct. No, playing Scrabble and scrabbling. This is actually the production of Scrabble. The popular lunch meat from the raccoon heartlands. Yes. Okay, this is, of course, where Scrabble comes from. It is their only native export.
Yeah, the Procyon loader brand.
Yep.
Yeah.
Scrabble always struck me as sort of being like pre-chewed pig.
No, that's Sporkle.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought that was one of those pastel ponies on the cartoon.
When you were living in Michigan, were you struck a lot by Scrabble? Was this a hazard? Were you harmed in the Scrabble rains?
It wasn't in Michigan, it was in Pennsylvania. I never saw Scrabble until Pennsylvania.
Never have you seen such Scrabble?
I was old enough that it didn't scar me terribly when I finally learned of its existence, but it does still haunt me.
I am genuinely surprised. I genuinely did think that Michigan was part of the Scrabble Belt.
I may have been in the wrong part of Michigan for that.
The only part of Pennsylvania I remember was Yoo-Hoo Serious.
You're not referring to Yahoo Serious, the Young Einsteiner. You're, of course, referring to Yoo-Hoo Serious, which was, of course, the whey chocolate whey protein-based smart drink.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Was advertised to four-year-olds.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That terrible times resulted from that. So
I have never
seen such deadly tantrums in my life.
Lots of people died.
Yeah.
Those were.
I hope it's not too soon for folks.
And second, under Gritchild, we are still describing how you would sell one of the following products to one of the following individuals. Number two, a set of toilet paper cozies sold by the Home Shopping Network to Cindy, one of the Home Shopping Network's phone operators.
Ooh, is Cindy a raccoon perchance?
Only on alternate Wednesdays.
Oh, okay. Thrifty.
That's not really enough for me to know. I understand how raccoons work, but I don't know much about other mammals. So you're going to have to fill in for me on this one?
Well, it's really like this. I mean, considering what's about to happen, the toilet paper deserves a little comfort beforehand and a nice place before... You know.
Right.
So the least you can do for your toilet paper is have a good cozy for it.
It's sort of
Cindy.
Like,
you better buy this, Cindy.
So I feel that my coworkers, I suppose, compatriots, comrades, rivals.
They told me this was going to be the
underlings. Underlings. But I have come woefully unprepared for this. There are simple premises of this that nobody's really bothered to consider. Occam's Razor says here that if the Home Shopping Network is selling toilet papers to Cindy, one of the phone operators in the Home Shopping Network, there is no implication of any other agent here. Therefore, it is most logical that Cindy is the phone operator selling to Cindy. So clearly, this is some kind of, like, memento sunshine of the eternal spotless science sleep and translation kind of thing. I think that basically just, I mean, they have incredibly long shifts on Home Shopping Network. And so I figure after, like, she's been up there for about 48 hours, she's just kind of entered this kind of Lynchian mindscape where she can, where the distinction between herself and the home audience and her and the cosmos in general has completely blurred. And so this is again some sort of like Jacob's ladder like psychedelic dreamscape in which she's just sitting there yammering to herself while slumped over on the countertop, you know, staring at the camera, foaming slightly in the mouth in this mental tableau I have, and just going, yes, Cindy, it's very useful. Thank you, Cindy. I've got five of them at home. Oh, Cindy, are you going to buy five? I'm going to buy 5 million of them. And she's just, you know, and people are just kind of buying them out of pity. And it's all very, you know.
Well, you know, that's actually why they only let you work 167-hour shift for the Home Shopping Network. Because at 168, you hit that sort of Zen kind of samadhi state of oneness with all things, achieve enlightenment, and just sort of right out of the studio.
I'd heard axes were involved.
My lawyer told me not to speak about that. It's not always 150.
And then they're just trying to, you know, because that's just good sport. That's good for the ratings, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you, esteemed panel. And now for our next round, what will the neighbors think? Please explain the following scandal. In 1943, Grace Hopper accepted a $40,000 bribe from IBM to install a backdoor in the Harvard Mark I mainframe. She did not actually install the backdoor, but kept the money for herself.
That's easy. She just simply didn't have the man hours to actually complete the backdoor code. So, you know, what she ended up doing was writing what turns out to be the very first implementation of the game Snake, and convinced IBM that all they had to do was get the Snake to the end. And then by the time they ever got around to asking her, wait, there's no exit to this, it's just a box and there's a snake in it. Well, you know, that money was already spent. She was already in, what, Argentina, I think is where she escaped to?
Venezuela, no extradition treaty.
Right. That is basically how I remember it from my computer engineering classes. I think that is, while that is an accurate story, that this is actually talking about a different incident. I mean, recall that basically, I mean, we're talking about a mainframe in 1943. These things are enormous. When they're saying install a back door, they mean install a back door. They actually, and the thing is, the only problem with this, the telling in here, is it's really misrepresenting what happened to Grace. See, they wanted to put in a hot tub. They had like plans for an entire back porch to the Harvard Mark I. Mm-hmm. And when she pointed out to them what a terrible idea it was to have a jacuzzi next to a fragile piece of industrial equipment, you know, that was going to be vital to the war effort, they, you know, she just basically, she ducked out of the whole deal and, of course, just went to live in the steam tunnels. And to there she, you know, she, as we all know, there she is to this day.
Now, the funny thing is, this is IBM. They never get rid of an idea. They never, you know, everything is worthwhile to them. So what happened was when they combined the idea of that back door, of the actual literal back door to the machine, with the snake game in the box, that became part of the spec.
They
built several machines in that style, and that's what inspired the game, The Witness.
And that's how you unlock the jacuzzi. There's a little tiny jacuzzi. If any of you have like action figures or Funko Pop figurines or anything, they'll be very entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, they will melt. They will melt. Yes,
but you know, but nonetheless, you can they'll enjoy themselves until then. You can basically, if you win at Snake, if you fill up every single pixel on the screen, then just the little door opens. You know, as a tribute, of course, to Grace Hopper.
Very enlightening. Our next scandal. The twin little girls in Stanley Kubrick's The Shining grew up to be notorious Robin Hood-type thieves
grifting millions from naive billionaires, and starting numerous horse farms around the United States where they hope to someday breed a unicorn.
So I'm not terribly familiar with the actual grifting part of this, but I do understand that they've actually managed to get two-headed llamas and three-headed alpacas now. No unicorns yet, I believe.
It turns out it's awfully difficult to breed a unicorn, mostly because of what you would have to feed a unicorn for it to maintain the horn sparkles. It's a very important part. If you don't have sparkles, you're not a unicorn. I don't care what that cartoon shows. That's not accurate. Unicorns have horn sparkles. Now, the thing about those little girls is they look like twins in that film. They were made up to look like twins. And it was a secret that Kubrick took to the grave of which one was made up to look like the other. So they used this fact to bilk those naive billionaires by saying that one of them had been through a horrible accident, had to have plastic surgery done to reconstruct her face, and so they didn't. If a billionaire could invest in a better surgeon to make them look alike again, they would become incredibly famous movie stars, and they would be able to publicly thank that billionaire. It'd be like great philanthropic move and everything. It'd be wonderful. And then what would happen is ultimately they would take the money and run. And later they actually used a little of the money for plastic surgery, but it was mostly to try to get one of those three-headed critters to look more like a unicorn. Didn't work. You just can't fake sparkles.
That is actually wholly accurate, and I have a very little add to that account. But once again, fun fact, those two girls, actually the famous River of Blood scene out the elevator and down the corridor, that was not actually a special effect. They can really do that. Go to the Knott's Berry Unicorn Farm in Walla Walla, Washington, and or Peoria, either location. There's one girl per location. And catch them in an elevator and wear your wetsuit, and they'll show you a good time. It's great.
See the wall of light.
Mm-hmm. Be really polite when you ask them to do it, though, because, I mean, that thing does get old if you're pestered for it all the time.
Their eyes do glow red when they do it, so, you know, that you just give them a little space.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Forewarned is forearmed. And our next round will be action movie one-liners. Please list the title of the film in which the following action movie one-liner was said, as well as the name of the individual saying it, and the context under which it was said. I'd knock you into the quantum state, but Planck's constant prevents me from doing so.
So if I remember right, this is from Richard Feynman Kicks the Shit Out of Everyone, the 1991 version, I think.
What, did they remake it in 91?
Oh, no, it was like a Dune thing, where there was like the original filmed in, I think, 88 and released in 89, but like they didn't actually, you know, the director's cut sort of was what came out in 91.
Oh, okay. I've only ever seen the director's cut.
Well, that's actually still a reference to the second Simpsons film released, which is going to be released in 2019. I'm actually surprised that we've got this, except, you know, you know, so basically, this is a quote from this. It's basically just John Frink as an action hero. And then, if you're wondering how a reference to that was made in what was it, 1991?
Filmed in 88.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know Richard Feynman like I know Richard Feynman, and I know Richard Feynman.
It's true. Yeah, personally. You've got his autograph.
It was in fact a retroactive homage there.
Cool.
You can do anything if you get a physicist drunk.
And our second action movie one-liner, don't worry, the atmosphere will break your fall.
All right, now, here's a question. Is it the first instance of that line in the movie or the second? Because if it's the first, that's actually Marina Sirtis. It was in the Star Trek film. They didn't release it because it ended up in all kinds of production hell. But Star Trek Breakfall, and that's actually a title call right there is what that is. And she wasn't quite so gruff when she said it. The second time around was after she'd been exposed to all that radiation. But the first time it was she was saying to Data, who's been at that point brought back from being utterly destroyed twice, but Data's turned evil, and she's having to, she's keeping him busy, basically engaging him in witty banter until he burns up in the atmosphere. That's what that line is from.
And of course, if we're talking about the second line, it's, you know, Die Hard.
Very good. And now for the lightning round. In other words, answer wisely or be struck by lightning.
Oh, shit. Oh.
What was our main topic? The one who gets it correct will have to eat one of the strawberry nut M&Ms on the microphone.
Oh, can you balance one of those on a microphone? You might be able to. Oh, I'm sorry, what was it? Oh, right.
Did we also have to eat the microphone?
The theme of the show, I think, was children who have to resell products to their future selves.
Reselling, products that resell children, so like some sort of robot salesman carrying, like sort of a robot Pied Piper kind of thing.
I saw that CBS story break.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's tragic, the countries where that happens. No, I think it was something sort of similar to that, but not quite. Children
who have to sell themselves to products.
Robot children who sell their way into products.
Robot children selling their parents to corporations.
Cybernetic children that tear products apart.
Oh, I'd watch that.
Cybernetic game show contestants that tear their prizes apart, eat them right in front of their producer.
Oh. How are those?
I
can smell
them. I've been tasting them for 5 seconds and I still don't have an answer for you.
Oh my gosh.
This is for science.
Volatile organic compounds.
I wouldn't say I don't have words, but I don't have, like, the chemical nomenclature, because there's no way that that's a natural flavor.
Oh, wow.
That flavor's got a 5 in it somewhere.
This is strange. I didn't even know strawberries had nuts.
I'm going to eat just the pink ones and see if they've got some pretty TF properties.
It's got hints of, like, methyl ethyl ketones in here.
Yeah.
I saw them in concert once. They were very good.
I'm also detecting a little bit of wavy gravy influence.
Hmm.
I would eat wavy gravy flavored M&Ms. Because what were those? It was one of the Ben & Jerry flavors, so it was what? Walnuts, pretzels,
and bong water.
I am afraid no one was able to provide our topic for tonight. Companies that thrive on getting children to resell their products.
Oh, yeah.
But fortunately for you, if unfortunately for our audience, our giant Frankensteinian lightning generator is in the shop.
That's actually because I've been converting it into a Tesla phone.
Suck it, Trebek!
It's great because you know, with a Tesla phone, I mean, you've seen these things, right?
No, but I remember the Raffi song.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Zap, Tesla phone.
We've already seized the means of production here, and by means of production, I mean the M&Ms. So, I think we all won here.
Maybe. These M&Ms are actually the children. They were cursed and became M&Ms.
Actually, I just had a second one, and we didn't win on this one, folks.
No. No, actually, we didn't. Those aren't really good.
No, I regret my decision.
They're just compelling.
I know.
That's terrible.
I think this was some sort of trap.
What have you done to us?
I think our producer has given us an expensive lesson in manners and following the format of the show.
Oh my god!
Why the hell am I still eating this? Our sponsor today, M&Ms. Let's give them all a big hand.
I think my tongue wants to declare itself independent from the rest of my body now and go find somewhere better to live.
I've left them only the green ones, which, I mean, I don't know. I guess they're supposed to represent strawberry stems or something. Are they actually stem flavored?
No, it couldn't be worse.
I don't think they taste like science, technology, engineering, or mathematics.
This is definitely something that was produced by an engineer.
And one final note on the topic of companies that thrive on getting children to resell their products. We at Facts But Better would like to send our best wishes to Captain O who is now managing a Cinnabon in a dying mall.
Godspeed to you, sir.
Yeah, I know there's no way you could possibly compare with your older brother, Captain EO, but still, keep on trucking, you know. You're a true American hero.
Wasn't Captain Video their cousin?
You know, that's quite possible to explain the connection with Captain N, Captain Power, and Captain Novolin.
Well, oh, yeah.
It's kind of like 100 years of solitude, you know, just like gradual, like tragedy of a dying dynasty kind of thing. Because you've got Captain Video, you know, and then you've got Captain Idio, who, of course, you know, the great philosopher, Captain, you know, just, and then of course you got Captain Dio, Captain, the heavy metal rocker.
Captain,
you
know, Trade.
Uh-huh. We don't talk about him. Captain EO, and then finally just Captain O, the weakest of the entire lineage, so...
Can you sing the Captain O theme song?
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Oh.
Yeah, presumably. I mean, oh, he's even been demoted, folks, as we speak. You know, you heard it here first. And now it's just O.
Very well. Now that the strawberry nut punishment has been distributed, the winner gets the peanut ones.
Actually, I think only the score sheet accrued any points, so the score sheet gets the peanut M&Ms.
It's only fair.
I got the tan ones. All mine.
That's all for now. Thank you for enjoying Facts, but Better.
Alright, y'all want to let me know when you're ready?
I am real close. Let me finish chugging off.
Chug.
That was a bad idea. There was a lot of Tabasco sauce in there.
And there's going to be even more in that.
Oh! Nose run.
I can speak
time. Down. That ring of fire.
We can't afford royalties on that one. If you just heard bleeps, then...
It's okay. Johnny Cash is dead.
No. You don't understand that the music is not owned by musicians anymore.
No.
Oh, shit. Johnny Cash is alive and he's got vengeance on his mind.
No, EMI is alive or some crap.
No, they're not alive. They're zombies.
Exactly. Oh, two-sided printing. Wow, our budget must have gone up.
Actually, this is actual paper.
Actually, what it is this was tissue paper, but each of the pages stuck together, so it's two-sided.
Tissue paper, but better.
Right.